what's going on, man?
Manny, thank you very much for having me here
today. This is your idea, and I'm glad that you came up with this idea. I want to give credit where credit's due. I know that I've been doing my share of safety shows, but I'm not an expert. I'm literally a fly on the wall. I'm paying attention, and I pride myself on absorbing what I possibly can from the professionals like yourself that will educate me to have a better understanding of safety. And like you said, and how a lot of people talk about, you can't learn safety when there's an accident. You have to prevent it.
That's true, Manny. And prevention is definitely the easiest way to avoid some of these issues. But again, thank you very much for having me here today. My name is Philip Ferreira. I guess we'll be hosting Safety Corner along with Manny here. And I think the point of the show is really to kind of explain all the regulations and safety and how it applies to employers in this province, and not just in construction, all the employers that are in this province, and kind of take a look at how the law applies to us, what we need to do to comply with the law. Yep. More importantly, though, to prevent injuries in the workplace and ultimately prevent any fines or charges that may be levied against an employer or a supervisor in any type of fatality or critical situation that they may have.
I'd like to say that the whole purpose of Safety Corner and talking with you and having you on the show and dissecting all this, it's more about an education on translation. It's not an education of interpretation.
Well, I get what you're saying. Yeah, the laws are extensive. They apply everywhere. Safety is one of those regulatory requirements that just goes everywhere. So not like driving just applies to drivers or something like that. We've had our Instagram page. Maybe a little bit about myself.
Of course, totally. Share it.
You know, so
whoever's not following, but your Instagram handle is at MS, is it MS1?
My underscore S1. Yeah. But I've been in construction health and safety probably since around the age of 22. I've been a consultant. I've been a construction worker. I've been a supervisor. A lot of different color hard hats. And eventually I became a Ministry of Labor inspector. And I was with those guys probably for about 8 years or so. Led a lot of fatality investigations, unfortunately. One of the biggest ones that I led, along with another inspector by the name of Guy Costa, another Portuguese inspector, was the Metron case, was the quadruple fatality that happened on Christmas Eve.
How many years back now are we talking about?
I think that was 2008 or 2009. Yeah. I can't remember exactly, but 2008.
Should never have happened.
It should never have happened at all. But that case changed a lot. Kind of the course of some of the laws, especially dealing with working at heights, right? So after I left the Ministry of Labor, I created S1 Safety. We're a consulting firm. We develop and health and safety programs and training and on-site compliance. But more importantly, we're here to assist small businesses, medium-sized businesses in complying with the regulations, making their workplaces safer, and all the subsequent things that happen after you do stuff like that, which is lower your LTI rates and save some money and, prevent injuries, which is the most important thing. Can't make money if you're in the hospital.
Of course.
Right. So we do that. We have a great team. We have great clients. And I'm really blessed and grateful for everyone involved. And we have a health and safety system, which is a digital occupational health and safety management software system, which allows you to do safety talks, inspections, health and safety program, training, a lot of things built inside. But more importantly, it's a system, and I think it might be the first of its kind in Canada, that does everything in 10 different languages, which
Off the top of your head, the 10 languages are?
Portuguese, Spanish, French, Italian, English, obviously. Arabic, Turkish, Russian, and we got Arab. I said Arabic.
You
right?
said Arabic.
We got a couple more too.
Yeah,
we kind of just take.
But it's good to have those options, right? To have that, so then people can actually understand that there's options here to learn what you need to learn.
Well, yeah, communication is key. You can have all these health and safety programs and safety talks and procedures, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're explaining this to a worker in English and the worker doesn't speak English, how effective is that communication?
It's not.
Are you doing it for them? Or are you doing it for your business? Yeah. Right? And to that being said, there's never really been a solution to this problem. This problem is as old as time, I guess, when it comes to workers and employer relationships, you know?
If it was up to you, Phil, like, what would the solution be? Because we know that we only hear about this when there is a catastrophe, when something happens, or when some of the content that you're going to be sharing, when that happens and it makes the world stage, you start wondering, okay, well, where's the safety around this?
Listen, construction is a dangerous job.
Yes.
It's a dangerous job. You can put in a bunch of controls, a bunch of procedures, a bunch of rules, a bunch of training, a bunch of communication, things can still go wrong.
Yep.
You have a lot of variables, you know, the weather, human element to it, whatever it may be. And you know, I've done a lot of investigations, and you look at these investigations after it happens, and hindsight's always 20/20. They could have, they should have, you know. But the reality is I'll say a majority of them are preventable.
Yep. Right? I agree.
You know, some of them I'll chalk up to acts of God. Some of them is like, holy cow, how did that happen? Even if you try to recreate it, it would be extremely difficult to recreate.
But there's also the factor of the reaction time and what everybody does after the fact. That's contributed to your training and your safety and how procedures, right?
Sure. And listen, there's a lot that goes into health and safety. And there's a lot of terminology that goes into health and safety. And one you might hear often is due diligence.
Mm-hmm.
Is due diligence safety?
Yeah.
You know, some will say that safety is the focus of preventing injuries or keeping one safe from bodily harm. And due diligence, you know, it can be debated as an employer or an organization or an individual doing what's necessary to kind of protect themselves and comply with the law. Right. So can you be a safe company and have no paperwork? Yeah, you can. You can.
Do you want to be that company?
No, because if something happens, your paperwork is what you use to defend yourself in court.
Yes.
I've conducted this inspection. I have a health and safety policy and program. We've communicated that to the workers. You know, you want to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that you took every reasonable precaution for the protection of that worker, right? When you start coming up with zeros, I do this, I do that, I do that. Okay, show it to me. Well, I don't have it. That's where due diligence comes in. That's the difference, yeah. Right? I did an inspection last week. Great, let me see it. Oh, I didn't write it down. Was it actually done?
We don't know.
Well, in certain cases, you know, investigations and corroborating witness statements, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, paperwork goes a long way in court. Right.
It's not that we're saying that every situation is going to take you to legality. Like that's not the objective here. The objective of Safety Corner in this show and the idea that what you want to share is really about, we all understand safety is probably one of the most boringest conversations to have. It is dry. It's just fraught with all kinds of words and phrases that do not interest you. It has nothing to do with sanding, cutting, drilling, like stuff like that, you know, building something with your hands. But we're trying to change that.
Listen, I've done a lot of training courses. I've trained a lot of workers. You know, some workers fall asleep in a training class and you try to spice it up in the conversation. And, you know, you try to keep workers engaged. You try to keep employers engaged. You know, you're trying to make it as interesting or relevant as possible. But yeah, it is a dry topic, you know, and it can get really boring really quick. If ask any worker that's fallen asleep in a safety training class and it's like, blah, 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 safety, blah, 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 right? It can be difficult, that's for sure. But again, you know, it's a game. All of this is just one big game. From the worker's perspective, your game is make money and survive.
Go home for the day.
Yes, with all your fingers and toes.
Yes.
And for the employer, it's make money and survive.
Same thing.
Right? It's the exact same thing, you know, and how does an employer get fined or charged or prevent these things from happening? You know, the Ministry of Labor is the most powerful enforcement agency in this province, hands down. You know, I've told supervisors and I've told employers, I would not want to be the one caught up on the receiving end of that investigation.
Yeah.
it's not a pleasant circumstance.
Yeah.
You know, and you should do everything possible to avoid it. And we're just talking about the business aspect of it. I'm not even talking about the social aspect of having one of your workers get buried alive in a trench, or, you know, like
just the loss of life in general.
Oh, right? Yeah. You know, and it's construction. There's a million ways to die on a job site. And I walk on a job site and the chances of me dying have gone up a few percent easily. Why? Just because I'm in a dangerous area.
Yeah.
I got to look up. I got to look down. I got to look left. I got to look right. My head is on a swivel.
You're assuming everybody else that's on the job site is doing the exact same thing.
Oh, that's where that's where trust comes in. And yeah, there's a massive amount of unspoken or unseen trust here. I trust that this guy set up the guardrail correctly. I trust that that machine is working in the way it's intended to be working. You know, I trust those straps. Did you inspect them? No, but the other guy that installed them, hopefully he did. Right? There's a big unforeseen level of trust. And you trust what the guy that came, or the worker that came before you did.
Yep.
And the worker that's coming after you. Right? And has it happened where, you know, because I dropped the ball, the next guy died? Yeah, it's happened.
It can.
It has. It's every possible scenario that you can imagine has happened on a construction project in Ontario in the last 50 years.
You think that it's been ramping up lately? You think we've been forgetting about safety?
The amount of injuries and fatalities on job sites? I don't know what the most recent stats are, but the stats can also be a little deceiving in terms of, you know, you want to identify the total number of injuries and the total number of fatalities. Well, what's the total number of workers? And is these stats based on 100,000 hours worked or just the total number of workers?
There's a number of factors attached.
There's a way, right? You know, some of those things get kind of bent a bit. But with this recent slowdown in construction, I'm sure the numbers are going down.
They are going down, but they're associated with, again, the amount of hours and workers on site.
Sure. And right. That's a direct
correlation. That doesn't mean that you're improving on safety.
No, not necessarily, right? Again, it's how the government portrays their data. It's up to them. If they want to prove that they're doing a good job, then they'll show the data that shows they're doing a good job.
Well, the nice thing is that I'd rather we all be shown everything so then we can make an informed decision, because I'm sure that there's a lot of safety scenarios that have unfolded on job sites that have not been reported.
For sure. 100%. Unreported injuries are massive. Depending on that worker and if that worker is illegal, for example.
Yeah, that's where I was headed towards, yeah.
There's been cases where a worker gets injured at work and then gets dropped off in front of the hospital and they change his boots so it's running shoes and, hey, you got hurt at home.
Yeah.
Right? Does that happen? Yeah. Yeah. Construction has a big underbelly in this province. You know, I was fortunate enough to be on a lot of different types of investigative teams while I was at the MOL. You know, different types of employers. The government will call them bad actors. That's their friendly terminology.
Bad actors?
I don't know.
Okay.
But what I can tell you are there are definitely employers out there where they don't give a shit. They don't care about life. They don't care about workers.
The bottom line.
They care only about the bottom line. You know, I've done investigations where once we follow the roofing company, and this is not a small roofing company, this is a big roofing company, and they were picking up homeless guys. Okay? Homeless guys, putting them on roofs, no equipment whatsoever, no training, no nothing, and giving them the tools, and away they go. And at the end of the day, they pay them in a bottle of whiskey.
Wow.
Or a case of beer, and throw them some dollars.
Wow.
Right? Does that happen? 100%. There's been cases, there's been investigations, you know. What we're talking about is human rights issues, I guess.
Well, it's a small percentage of it, but then all of a sudden it becomes a spotlight on the industry, right? When the fact of the matter is that every employer that's running a construction business, whether it's from the owner to the operator to the supers to the workforce, everybody should be conscious of safety. Sure. It should be priority.
Oh, should be. In an idealistic
world. And I'll be honest, it's not.
And we need to keep in mind too, you know, like your personal life versus the regulatory requirements on a construction project. You know, maybe on the weekend you drive your ATV and forget to put on your helmet. And maybe you go and do this and forget to do that. And you drive down the street and you don't put on your seatbelt type deal, right? is trying to bridge that human component and apply it into construction. You know, another example, a worker comes from another country. Okay, their safety standards, they've been working in construction for 15 years in X country. When they come over here, you know, all of a sudden we have all these expectations, these rules, these duties and responsibilities. These workers, A, don't speak English. B, aren't familiar with any of the laws that apply to them, right? And my family is the same. We were immigrants. We came from Portugal, my grandparents. And, you know, they went through that cycle where shut up, get in the hole and dig it. And here's a trench and it's 9 feet deep and 10 feet deep and nobody bats an eye, right? But these workers, you know, they're deemed or classified as vulnerable workers where they get exploited. Yeah, vulnerable is the terminology that that the government uses, right? Illegal is not a word that they like to use that often. But
vulnerable?
Vulnerable.
I would say anybody who's not applying any kind of safety procedures is vulnerable.
Well, vulnerable to the point where they're exploited, where their passports can be seized and they can be threatened, right? You don't get in that hole, I'm going to burn your passport.
Yeah.
Does that happen? Yeah.
Of course it does.
100%. Metron case was a prime example of that.
Yeah.
Right? We had, when we went to go serve the summonses, I think there was like 12 guys sleeping in one bedroom apartment. Right? These guys are...
And the construction owner is aware of this, didn't care about it, just get the job done.
Oh, no, they organized it. They bring these workers over, you know? They pay for this and then pay for that. Then once they hear, again...
So I think the best thing to do is just to kind of make sure everyone is aware of safety.
Sure.
And, right?
And these examples that we're talking about now, we're talking about the bottom 10%.
Yes.
Right?
It ain't the majority of the industry.
Not at all. The top 25%, great companies, care about safety, have very elaborate systems, have safety teams, or things are being verified. You know, these guys are getting different accreditation programs. You know, they're getting rebates on WSIB. And so there are companies out there that strive, and you can see them, right? You see who they are. And, you know, you drive by a site, it's like, well, that site looks really good.
You can see it.
Sure, you can see it.
Yeah.
And then you get, you know, start going down the totem pole for say anything, but you start going down the list here and then you get the extreme. And the extreme from those really great companies are these types of companies, the ones that exploit workers, the ones that don't give a shit about safety, and the ones that will put you 13 stories in the air with no harnesses on, right? These companies exist. And, you know, you got to find the happy balance, I guess, between all of this as an employer. You know, there are expectations. There are regulations. And failure to comply with these regulations may result death, injury, and or fines.
Now, isn't there, Philip, I mean, isn't there a whole world attached to the culpability of things where all of a sudden you're getting certain corporations hiring other corporations to hire other corporations and we start going down the sub-trade route, and now the responsibility of safety is falling away further and further from the uppers. Is that part of the industry as well too?
So at the MOL we had a saying, shit rolls uphill when there's an injury.
When there's an injury.
Right? The first person that always takes it is the worker. I fell, I broke my leg. I fell and I'm paralyzed.
Yes.
Right? The worker is always the first one to suffer the employer's lack of safety.
Yeah.
Then it goes next. Who's the supervisor of this worker? Hey, you knew this guy was up there or this worker was up there not tied off?
Were they trained?
Were they trained? Educated? Did you have the equipment? Did you provide the equipment? Nose, nose, and nose. Okay, let's go up the ladder to the next one. Employer. Hey, employer, did you know that these workers were working there without fall protection? You know? And this question just keeps on going up until you get to the top. It's... In the show, we'll break it down a bit, duties and responsibilities. You know, when I told some of my friends and colleagues about the show, you know, in safety, they're like, Phil, just whatever you do, don't make it boring. Don't start reading off PowerPoints and don't start, you know, talking to everybody about the act and the regulations. They're going to fall asleep. Your show is just going to be as boring as everybody else's podcast. So we're going to try to avoid that as much as possible, try to spark some life into health and safety. And again, what we want to do is highlight the things that you can do, All right. As an employer, as a supervisor, as a worker, you can do things. You know, you can ask questions. You can get your training. You can, you know, we want to inform you. And we're going to kind of highlight some of the things you see in the news and some of the things we post on our Instagram page. And we're going to kind of break it down. You know, fortunately for me on the Instagram,
on IG.
On Instagram, you know, we have a lot of workers here in the city. We have different, a lot of employers following us. We get a lot of pictures and videos sent to us from different job sites. Hey, is this safe? Hey, what can I do? Hey, what should I, you know, people have questions. They're
engaging.
They are engaging, that's for sure. You know, and some of the videos people send us, and you know, we have some we can show and discuss. You know, it's like first person POV on a collapse that just happened on a job site. Right? And we post these videos. Why? Why do we post these videos? We post them because we want people to see what the results are of not doing what you're supposed to be doing. You know, there's a lot that people can be doing.
Here's my issue with all of those videos and that content. It's similar to seeing a motor vehicle collision and you're rubbernecking. Does that make you a better driver now that you saw a collision and you probably figured out what was the cause of that collision? But are you now a better driver? Like me personally, I'm always wearing a seatbelt. I've always worn a lid when I'm motorcycle riding because I have been in that situation. Mm-hmm. I didn't change my mindset because I got into the situation. I already prevented that mindset before I got into the situation. Well, so when I see these videos on construction sites where we see things going wrong and it's almost like a rubbernecking situation where people are watching and they're going, I can't believe that's going on right here in Toronto, downtown on this high rise. And my thought process when I see that is, how did we get from A, B, C, D to all of a sudden this is the situation? Because in reality, it was preventable.
Yeah, no, for sure. A lot of these things are preventable. But, you know, it comes down to how people learn, right? You either learn the easy way, which could be boring. You sitting in a class and, hey, make sure you tie off so you don't
fall off. It's not the right way to learn.
Some people, that's all they learn is from the book, right? I pride myself on experience right?
Yeah.
But I think the main reason why I created the Instagram page was to kind of show the worst case scenario, right? This is what happens. And not to mention, you know, you see something that happens, worker fatality, and CP24 covers it or whatever, and there's been a fatality and the Ministry of Labor is investigating, period.
Caution tape, fire trucks, ambulance, yeah, I get
it. You know, us in the construction industry, we want to know what happened. Why did it happen? What are the contributing factors? How could it have been prevented? Like, there's no follow-up to some of these things.
What do you think? How many employers look at that? They see it. They all get conversed between texts, group texts, and all kinds of stuff. And the next day they come in, they go, guys, we're stepping up our safety game now.
Well,
I don't think a lot do.
You know what?
I'm guessing.
I can guess. But what I can say is a lot of employers have reached out to us through Instagram. What kind of services do you provide? What can I do? Et cetera, et cetera. A lot of workers have reached out to us through Instagram asking questions about who should I contact? I have this situation. What can I do? Right. So I feel like we're making a difference. I get a lot of people commenting, you know, thank you very much for posting that video and thank you very much for this and that. And it's nice. Right. It's nice to know that people are learning and people are watching and people are asking some of these questions. And a lot of it comes down to just asking questions. Right. You want to learn what happened to that worker fatality or in that situation? Let's ask the questions. Let's talk about it. Let's open it up. Let's look at some of the contributing factors. Again, I'm not part of the Ministry of Labor. I'm not the one doing these investigations, right? But a majority of these fatalities, it's not the first time something like it. It's not the first time a dump truck has ran over a worker. It's not the first time a worker has fallen from this height.
The unfortunate thing is they're probably not the last worker.
No.
They'll never be a last worker.
No. We will never have zero fatalities in this province. It's unattainable. It's unrealistic.
That's what I was going to say.
That's like saying that we'll never have vehicle accidents on the highway or on the roads. It's never going to happen. Can we minimize it? Sure. Let's get some drunk drivers off the road. Let's do more blitzes. Let's, you know, enforce more.
Let's stop paying for licenses. Manny. I'm seeing it. So it just, that's a whole other world. But
it is a whole other
world. That's what this show's all going to be about. Like, that's what we want to talk about. We're, like you said, we're not going to try to make this boring. We are not going to be the teacher in front of the class pointing the finger. Do this. No.
Do it if you want.
Yes.
You're required by law to do it. If you choose not to do it, this may happen. And chances are, longer enough that you do it, it's going to happen, right? But I've seen a lot of different companies, and I've worked with a lot of different companies, and I've worked with companies that have 4 workers. This is a very small company. They're starting off. They're trying to do their best. Production and making money is their number one priority, which makes sense, right? I get
well,
it.
Any business is of like course. That.
You know, my business, when I started off, it was just me and a couple other people. And, yeah, you know, we try our best to do what we can, right? But as a company grows, it's almost like a child, you know. As the company grows, it starts working for different builders. They start growing in terms of numbers, you know. They may have an encounter with this. They may have an encounter like the Ministry of Labor, or they may have an encounter with WSIB or something along those lines. And then they'll start prioritizing safety more, right? And
Will they?
I like to think so. The companies I've worked with, you know, they have a genuine interest. They want to improve. They want to work for these bigger constructors that require them, that have expectations of these employers, right? They want to level up. If you want to level up, you know, you can either stay as ABC Roofing that has 4 guys and 6 homeless workers and do everything under the radar and get paid cash, and that will only take you so far.
You hope that nothing goes wrong.
Oh, yeah. And if something goes wrong, this is the type of employers that will drop the guy off in front of the hospital and take off his boots.
But I get the sense that a lot of companies that grow, because listen, everybody that gets into construction, it's about growth.
Yeah.
You want to learn one set of skills when you get started. You want to improve those set of skills, which means that you have to learn more education. You have to do different projects. You have to partner with other people. You have to continue growing. So if you're looking at your business and you're growing, let's say it's 1 employee, now it becomes 3 employees, and so on and so on. But I get the sense that when it comes to safety, it starts to not grow as well as your business grows.
Well, again, that's up to the employer.
100% comes
from
the top.
Safety always comes from the top. And it's up to the employer and their rationale for doing what they do. Safety costs money, no matter what. Hard hats cost money, harnesses cost money, trench box costs money, right? And it comes down to the employer, the rationale why they should do it, right? And I think that's as an employer, as an owner of a company, you know, you battle yourself with this. You know, your focus is, you wear many hats. I'm the accountant, I'm the marketing manager, I'm the president, I'm the worker, I'm the, right? And safety is just another one of those things on the list. And it's one of those things that, okay, as long as nothing happens, you know, fingers crossed, we'll just keep on winging it and keep on going. But again, it all comes down to the employer.
That's just gambling.
Well, all of this
is inevitable that something's going to happen if you don't prepare for the inevitable.
Listen, I'm not the most safest person in my personal life in terms of, you know, do I forget to wear a helmet sometimes if I ride my snowmobile, right? But I have an example to set. I have 2 children that I love very much, and I try to instill into them a bit of risk. Because you need to have risk.
You have to.
Right? You need to take chances. But the question is, what are you willing to trade for that risk? And I don't expect my children to willing to risk their lives. Right? And this is what it comes down to. This is what we're rolling the dice on. It is a bit of a casino run where, you know, today nothing happened. Tomorrow maybe nothing's going to happen. But if I keep on doing this long enough, you know, odds are
something's going to happen.
Right? It's risk and probability and all of that stuff. It all comes into play. And you know, there are employers that care. They reach out and say, Philip, I got 4 guys, I got 5 guys, or I got 5, 6, 7 workers, whatever it is. You know, what do I need to do? Well, listen, you need to have a health and safety program, number one. That is your playbook for your business. This is how we do it. This is how we look at it. This is what you need to do, worker, to ensure compliance and ensure you do these things safe.
Designed for your business today, but also prepared for your business tomorrow.
100%.
Right?
100%.
So it doesn't matter if you're a one-person business and you got one employee, you should still design some sort of safety.
Well, some sort of safety, yes. There are some trigger points under the act in terms of you have X amount of workers.
Then it's different.
Then you need to kick in your... That's when you have to create an occupational health and safety policy. And off the top of my head, I think it's 5 or 6. That's when you're required by law to have a health and safety policy and program, right? So let's say I'm self-employed. Do I need a health and safety program? Who am I going to communicate it to? Myself?
Not a bad idea, no?
Well, listen, you definitely should have some rules. You definitely should have a game plan. But again, the health and safety program is designed and focused to protect the workers. If you have no workers, right, do you still need to know what the laws are?
But 100%. You are a worker, yeah.
You are a worker. You are an owner.
you're also another set of eyes that could see other job sites. So if you are a sub and you're coming onto a job site and you're doing work independently, you should still be aware of what is right, what is wrong.
It depends on the constructor, really, in that case. Yeah. If I go into a small infill housing project where the constructor is ABC, whatever, and they hire multiple sub trades, you know, depending on the nature of the project, depending on the nature of the business, they don't care if you wear a hard hat. They don't care if you wear running shoes. They don't ask you twice. Oh, there's a guardrail missing there. Watch out for the hole. Right? Like, you see it. You get onto these job sites and like, yo, man, you got a massive hole here on the second floor. There's guardrails missing. Oh, yeah, I should put up guardrails. This is common sense too. But again, a lot of the onus on some of these projects, if the constructor isn't pushing it, nobody really cares.
Why should I come along?
Sure.
But you should come along. It should be like that. Well, that's what I want to just like, that's what this show is going to be about. So it's like, we don't want to, I don't want to point the finger. I just want to say, listen, figure out a way that you can be a better, safer worker for yourself and for the people around you.
Well, like I said, man, this thing's a big game. You know, the number one thing is to make sure your workers don't get injured or die. And the next one is make sure you don't get charged.
Yeah.
Right? How can you avoid those things? And the how is the biggest question. How do I do this? How do I do that? How do I work safer?
How do I... Safety education, right?
Sure, but some of it's experience.
Yeah,
right.
Hands-on, for sure.
I know safety professionals that spent 3 years in school and all they learned was from the book. Does that make a great safety professional?
Nope. I'm going to say no.
Experience definitely contributes.
It's a nice guide. It's a nice precursor. It is.
You know, for my position as a consultant, and I've trained safety professionals, I've trained a lot of safety professionals, you know, and one thing I tell them all the time, this job as a consultant, you're providing recommendations. You're trying to provide information to help better the position of the employer or the position of the worker or supervisor or the constructor, whatever it may be. But this job is 60% customer service, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, you need to know the laws. Yeah, you need to know how they're applied, right? And you gain a lot of that through experience. Like the best job I ever had, besides the one I currently have now, and being a father, was at the Ministry of Labor, right? You gain a wealth of experience. They toss you in the fire really quick. Oh, you got a critical and another critical, and it's only 10 a.m. Okay, great.
Wow.
Right? It's like a firefighter. You're just putting out fires nonstop. I think their workload is something like 80% reactive. Yeah. But.
That's too many.
Oh, yeah. What was I saying?
No. We got to wrap it up. That's what we wanted to introduce the show.
100%.
Right? We wanted 100%. To introduce the show. And then on the next episode, we're going to talk a lot about, okay, let's start diving into situations. Yeah. Start diving into the book. Start talking about specific details. And then we'll make it as entertaining as possible.
100%. Right? And I don't want to come across as I know everything about safety. There is so much safety in so many regulations that apply to so many different sectors. You know, it's almost impossible to know every single regulation and stuff like that. But where I do come from is a position of experience. You know, I've done a lot of cases. I've been on job sites since I was a kid. You know, and sometimes the comparison, and when we teach some of these new safety professionals and consultants, I'm like, hey, listen, you know, the best way to describe our position or our job is we're just like referees in a soccer game. We know the rules. We know the game. You know, we know what needs to happen. Sometimes we let things play on. Sometimes we give out a yellow. And sometimes we give out reds. Right? And I think that's maybe the best approach for any safety professional out there. You know, you try your best to make your little world as safe as can be. You're doing it for your employer, but you're also doing it for the workers on site. Yeah. And there's a human component to this. You know, you can be a safety professional and, the Occupational Health and Safety Act says this, this, and that. But if the people aren't paying attention to you, the workers aren't listening, the workers aren't caring, you're not connecting, you're not relating.
There's more value in knowing the fact that you've been on several hundreds, thousands, different job sites, because there's an advantage there. Most constructors, most tradespeople have only been on a few job sites, right? And they know, and it doesn't matter if you're going from one high rise or one project to the next, if it's the same employer, then odds are the rules in the game and what they've designed and laid out are the same.
For sure.
You have been on the lowest of the low and the highest of the highs, where you've seen scenarios that you couldn't even write, and they unfolded because construction is a custom thing on a 24/7 base.
Yeah, 100%. You know, you try to, when you're developing a health and safety policy and program, for example, like you try to customize it, you try to customize it the best you can to the scope of work that this employer does. So for example, if it's a plumbing company, you're not going to have components in there that deal with tower cranes.
Yeah.
Right? It's unrelatable. It has nothing to do with them. So the health and safety program needs to be customized, and it needs to reflect what that business does. You know, and again, as an employer, you want the best health and safety policy and program that you can get.
Yeah.
Why? Because if shit hits the fan, that's what you're using to defend your business. And there's a lot on the line here. It's not like, hey, you're going to get a fine for $300. No. The max fine an employer can receive in this province is $2 million per charge.
Per charge.
Per charge. Now, I've personally never, ever seen a max fine get
done. But it's on the books. It's there.
It's on the books. It's on the books. And we're talking about, I think, the other fine at $1.5 million for a director of a corporation. Right? So there is a lot on the line. And besides, obviously, workers and their health and safety, right? But in a business perspective, there's a lot on the line.
There is, yeah.
Right? And, you know, I don't know any business that can take a $2 million hit. Even some of my best clients don't want nothing to do with that. You know, they avoid investigations as much as possible. They avoid, right? Maybe avoid is not the best word. They try their best to not be in those situations.
Yeah.
And the workers try their best. And like I said, you know, I've been fortunate to have really great clients. We do a lot of work for major construction companies in this province. You know, some of my clients include townships, the entire municipality. And then a lot of my clients, and the ones that I prefer, are the small businesses, you know, 10 workers or less.
Yeah.
They're the ones that face the most challenges. They're the ones that need the most information. They're the ones that need the most guidance. They're the ones that are growing, right? And they're facing a variety of challenges. If it's not this enforcement agency, it could be that enforcement agency. It could be the constructor. Hey, submit your records of training before you start here. Oh, hey, Phil, we don't have any records of training. Okay.
Start creating.
Yeah, start training, right? But when we take on a new client, you know, for example, one of our newer, not our new clients, but recent clients last year, they do traffic control. And, you know, I'm not going to pretend I know everything about traffic control. I don't know everything about carpentry. I don't know everything about bricklaying, you know. So I was tasked with building their health and safety policy and program. And actually a majority of the workforce is actually females for this company. And I wanted to get a feel for what they do and the challenges that they face. So the best way for me to do that is to go for a ride along. Yeah. So I spent the whole evening with a couple crews, and I just rode on the back of the trucks and put down some pylons and stuff like that, and barrels and, you know, a variety of other traffic control measures. but I wanted to, you know, walk a mile in their shoes, to speak.
Of course, which and makes a lot of sense.
For me as a safety professional, that's the way I learn. Mm-hmm. It's easy for me to say, oh, the regulation says this, so you're going to do that. Fine, but let's understand how they do it. You know, by doing it this way, are we creating more problems? Are we creating more challenges for the worker? Is it becoming more difficult? Right? So
that's a valid argument.
Sure. You know, it's
because there's a lot in the book that I think doesn't understand site, doesn't understand conditions from all different stages of the construction, right?
Application of the law and when it applies.
Yeah.
Right? Does this law apply to me currently based on the work that I'm doing? You know? But there's a lot of standard regulations, housekeeping, fire prevention, you know, access and egress, ladders, right? So there are a lot of regulations that deal with specifics. When you're at this height, you will be protected against falls.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, some people say, oh, the laws are gray and or the laws are black and white. The law is written. It's there on paper. Take a look at it. Yeah. Read it. Right? And you know, one way I compare this to employers is, you know, imagine having a driver's license, but you don't know what any of the signs mean. You don't know what any of the laws are.
You shouldn't have a driver's license.
Yeah, but what happens? You come from an international country. You can get your driver's license. I have one in X country, and now I got a 6-month Canadian one.
When I was getting my Portuguese license, my Portuguese driver's license, I had to learn the whole agricultural science. We don't have all those agricultural signs in downtown Toronto.
No.
You know, we don't know what it is about cows crossing, whatever. Like, that's all part of the book. That's there. So you're right. Sure. You have to get from more information regarding where you're at, where you're working, the site, the city, the country, everything at that. It's all
related, right? And that's what I compare it to. It's like having a driver's license and not knowing what any of the laws are. And none of it's in a language you understand.
That even becomes more challenging.
You throw a bigger curveball into that whole situation, right? What are the penalties? Oh, I can be charged? Holy shit. And that's the face of a lot of employers. When I say $2 million and it's written there in the act, they're like, what? $2 million?
They thought it was $250 for a lid. Not wearing a lid.
Yeah, I think it's $295 now.
Is it gone up?
Yeah.
It's gone up.
Everything's gone up.
Me personally, I've always said it's too low. In my opinion, it's too low. That's just me.
Well, you know, the court looks at it as what's an adequate deterrent.
Yes. And that's why I think it's too low. When they introduced the distracted driving with the phones, I thought it was too low. When I went to Italy, when it was all introduced, at the same time that Ontario, Canada introduced it, it was something like no points. It was like $150 or something like that, right? I go to Italy and it was like license suspension, 1,500 euros. That's a deterrent to me. And nobody used the phones while they're driving.
That whole situation.
But that's where we're at now with our laws on distracted driving, right?
Listen, I have my opinions on that, but like, it really sucks that a corporation made a most addictive piece of technology ever, gave it to everybody, and then you get in shit for using it.
It's not their solution. It's not their problem. Nope. Right? This is the introduction of the show. This is what we're talking about. So I think you can get a very good sense, everybody that's listening and watching it. We're not going to make this boring. We're going to try to figure out ways to educate you guys in the way you need to be educated. Everybody's different. That's where you're coming in, Phil, right?
Sure.
So on the next episode, we're going to start highlighting certain things and we're going to start deep diving into safety.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got some images, you got some videos, you've got some scenarios. We're going to have a lot of questions. We're going to have some solutions, and we're just going to continuously do that. We're going to look at job sites, whether they're in our own backyard, job sites that are outside of this country, what have you. But we're going to talk about what went right, what went wrong, and what potentially was going to go really bad.
100%. You know, we want this show to help people. Whether it's a worker that's watching, whether it's a supervisor that wants to understand more about what they need to do, or an employer that needs to get informed and wants to bring their company up to a different level. You know, this is about excelling. This is about being better. This is about putting your best foot forward. This is about trying your best to prevent a fatality.
Yep.
And it's your small little world. Those are your workers. Those are your friends.
Could be family too.
In some cases, family, yeah.
Lots of cases, family.
Right? We need to provide you guys more information. You know, and don't get me wrong, there's tons of information that different associations and the government puts out and their websites, and it's very informative.
But it's hard to navigate.
Whether people actually go there to navigate it, right? I'm sure there's tons of information about a lot of things, and you know, I don't go to that website. And
it doesn't hurt to have someone like yourself that has the experience on site that help you. This is what this means.
We're going to do it. We're going to explain it. We're going to break down some videos. We're going to follow up with some of these investigations. We're going to see how these workers died. And we're going to try to learn something from it.
Yeah.
And that's the game plan, right? We want to help make a difference. And we're trying to make it sound as not as preachy, standing on a soapbox and everyone's listening to us.
Because nobody's going to learn from that.
I don't learn that way.
No. Not anybody.
I've been known to fall asleep in a class or two.
Yeah, no. And that's the we'll leave the government to continue doing it that way. That's how they want to teach. Let them do that. That's fine.
Yeah, 100%. Right. Listen, I speak a few languages. I've been on job sites. I've done training in the basement of an unfinished house. I've done training in boardrooms for X amount of workers and directors of multi-million-dollar corporations. It just comes down to attitude.
Yeah.
Right?
It comes, you got to be down. Open to it.
100%.
You have to be very open.
Because if
to
you
it.
Ignore it and just keep on rolling the dice at the casino, that's all it is. You just keep on rolling until, oh, craps.
And you're that's out. Exactly what happens. To reach you, Phil, to get a hold of you, best way to get a hold of you?
Well, if you have any questions, you're an employer out there, you can send us an email to info@mys1s.ca. If you're a worker or any employers that follow us on Instagram, DM me if you have questions, the way everyone's always...
My underscore S1.
Yeah. Ask questions, please. We'll try to answer them the best we can. And if I can't answer it, I'll point you in the right direction.
That's exactly it, man.
That's all the best I can do.
So, till next show.
All right. Sounds good.
We're out of here, man.